Welcome to Medical Monday right here on eRadio, and nice to chat again to ophthalmologist Dr. Dylan Joseph, who is fresh from Milan. He's just returned from a very interesting trip. He's going to tell us all about it. And then we're also talking about something called STODS, or STODS. Dylan, Dr. Joseph, a very good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Jan, and good to be back in the country. I must say the European weather is pretty good at the moment, though, but happy to be back and at the office again.
Now tell us, where exactly did you go and what did you do? I saw some photos and it looked absolutely amazing.
Yeah. No, so once a year, the European Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons, otherwise known as ESCRIS, gets together, and it's a massive conference. It's actually a bit too big. There's about 10,000 delegates, and they run 25 parallel sessions just on cataract and refractive surgery. But, you know, often the smaller off-site meetings are really more meaningful, and we get to meet and greet our colleagues from all over the world, different countries, different cultures, nationalities, people we haven't seen for 3 or 4 years, and we can workshop ideas and talk about the latest and the greatest in the technologies and sit around round tables as well and discuss the new technologies, which I've been lucky and privileged enough to have been able to do this year at ESCRIS with some of the other what we call key opinion leaders in the technology in the world. So really, really fantastic. It's good to stay current and good to see what's coming out and what's available in the next 3-4 years. And as I said earlier, it's a rapidly expanding discipline. In fact, I think the fastest in medicine. And refractive specifically, the fastest in ophthalmology. So very, very exciting times to be involved in refractive surgery and changing people's lives. So it was a great meeting. Milan is an awesome city, very vibrant, very busy, and it was a bit of a whirlwind of a trip. And we're coming back revived and full of new knowledge, and hopefully we can start trialing a few things as well at the clinic here.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I guess, like you said, it was a whirlwind trip, so it was probably all work and no play, eh?
Well, mostly work. We had to fit in 1 or 2 days around, you know?
Yeah. Okay, well, that's nice. It's good to brush up on knowledge, especially in ophthalmology, where things change so rapidly, and especially with the technological advances also in the field.
But 100%. You get stale if you don't, really.
Yeah, exactly. But today we're talking about, I don't know if I should call it STODS or is it STODS? Yeah. What do we call it?
Well, it's an acronym, but STODS makes it easier to say, like ESCRIS, for the European Society of Cataract and Refractive Surgeons. The STODS stands for Surgical Transient Ocular Discomfort Syndrome. So it's a bit of a mouthful, but essentially the surgical part means we induce it with surgery. Transient, it's exactly that. It's temporary. It doesn't last forever. Ocular is the eye, and discomfort syndrome. So it's the new concept that describes what patients would classically feel as discomfort and dry eye symptoms and redness and foreign body sensation after a surgical procedure.
But,
dry eye is a misnomer, so we've renamed it.
So STODS, does everyone develop it, Dr. Joseph?
Well, we see it most commonly in laser vision correction surgery. Now, I'm talking specifically about eye surgery now. So any surgical procedure that you're going to do to the eye where we are sterilizing the eye, with iodine, betadine, we're sterilizing the skin, the eyelashes. So we really are disrupting the normal homeostatic environment on the surface of the eye. And then in the postoperative period, we're giving our patients drops that have got preservatives in. And preservatives like benzalkonium chloride, which has to be put in these drops, is unfortunately damaging to the surface of the eye, to your tears. So it disrupts the tears more than what we did in the preparation for the surgery and more than what the surgery does. So we really create this uncomfortable environment for the tears to try and survive and thrive when we've disrupted it with surgery. And we see that with LASIK. In LASIK, we're actually making a surgically induced flap with laser, And we're not severing nerves, but we're parting them, we're moving them aside. But in doing that, the nerves get angry and they need to then find their place again on the surface of the cornea, so to speak. And in doing that, the patient then goes through this process of sometimes feeling irritation, foreign body sensation, fluctuation of vision is another big symptom of that. But we can also see it, and we often see it in cataract patients. The older the patient is, the more unstable that tear film environment has become, the more computer work people do, the more the associated diseases people have, like autoimmune diseases and rheumatoid arthritis, the more prone they are to developing this syndrome. But it's about either recognizing these signs and symptoms prior to the surgery and managing it first. That's really, really critical, as best we can. Sometimes we can't get it 100%, but the patient needs surgery, for example, cataracts. And then it's about recognizing those symptoms afterwards and treating them to try and nip it in the bud as quickly as we can, and to make that transient period of discomfort for the patients as short as possible.
So, Dr. Joseph, it is obviously treatable then?
Yes, exactly. As the nature suggests, it's transient. So we're either going to use a combination of anti-inflammatories, lubricants, water intake to be increased, omega-3 capsules. If people are doing a lot of screen time, it's really bad for the surface of the eye. So we often try and advocate that 20-20-20 rule, where you need to look away from the screen every 20 minutes and blink 20 times actively. You know, staying out of air-conditioned environments. In winter, we have the heater on and the aircon, and in the car, the aircon's blowing directly into our eyes. So often we see patients do okay for 2 or 3 weeks after the surgery, and then they go through this dip where suddenly all these drops that they're throwing onto the surface of the eyes really start playing havoc with the tear film, and that's when they become symptomatic. But we warn everyone that is a risk of surgery, but it is transient and it is, as you say, treatable. It will not last forever. If it does last longer than what we'd expect, then we've got to be looking at something else. Is there an autoimmune disease? Is there a Sjogren's disease where the body attacks the lacrimal gland, which produces tears, and the salivary gland, which produces saliva? Is there rosacea, so where people get, you know, inflamed nose and cheeks episodically throughout the year? So there's a whole bunch of questions that we need to look at preoperatively, and if postoperatively the patients are not doing well, then we need to look into what the potential reason is over and above the surgery.
So how long it lasts is really dependent on the person itself. So it varies from person to person.
Absolutely, and varies from person to person. I mean, most people within 4 to 6 weeks are going to settle down if they struggle with the STODs post laser vision correction or cataract surgery. We do occasionally get people that struggle up 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and it can be a real battle. And unfortunately, are very disgruntled patients. They're unhappy because they potentially didn't have any symptoms prior to surgery. Now they develop these symptoms. But it's just about holding hands, walking that journey together, saying, listen, we will get you there. It's not just the fact now that it's the surgery that there's something else that we need to look at, and we need to treat this as aggressively as we can to get you there. And unfortunately, the one bad symptom is that it causes fluctuation of vision. And obviously, patients do LASIK or cataract surgery to try and improve their quality of vision. So once you start getting this fluctuation, it becomes very disruptive to their lives and disconcerting. So we really do have to recognize that and make sure we walk that journey. But fortunately, the cases that last between 3 and 9 months are very few and far between.
When you say disruption of vision, Dr. Joseph, is it going blurry or is it going dark? What happens?
If you use the analogy of driving in the rain and your windscreen wipers aren't working properly, you're not going to see where you're going, are you?
Yeah.
Because imagine that rubber blade on the windscreen wiper is not working. Every time it moves over the windscreen, you'll get this moment of transient clarity, and then it goes foggy again because the rain's on the windscreen. Mm. So very similar to the eye system. Every time a patient blinks, theoretically that lubrication on the surface of the eye coats the surface. And when you open your eyelids again, those tears evaporate. And as they evaporate, we know that the most important interface that light travels through before it hits your lens in the eye and the retina at the back is your tear film. So if your tear film is poor, if your windscreen wiper blades are not working properly, you're not going to see. It's going to be transiently blurred and transiently clear. So people describe it as a classic waxing and waning of their vision. It comes and goes. It's clear, then it's smudgy. So you don't lose vision itself. It doesn't go dark, or you're not going to have a drastic change like that. But people do then complain of transient change to the vision, and that's always tear film. Either that or something else called floaters, which we've discussed, and we can get back to that at a later stage. But 99% of that is on the front of the eye and your tear film.
Yeah. Dr. Joseph, our final question for today. Would you say there's a specific group, maybe a specific age group, who is more at risk for STODs?
Yeah. So the older the person, the higher the risk, for sure. We start decreasing our body fluid production, including saliva and lacrimal fluid or tears, the older we get. The more time we spent in front of computers, and depending on our work-life environment and external factors, and then of course systemic factors, autoimmune disorders, etc., use of medications. Those are all factors that we've got to take into account, and generally the older we are, the higher those risk factors, because all of them come into play. So most people beyond 55, 60, yes, we're really going to be very careful in terms of watching that post-operatively. The younger you are, and that's why, having LASIK, for example, the younger you are, the better. Your body recovers quicker, and you're far less likely to develop these symptoms in your 20s and 30s and 40s than you are in your 60s and 70s. That's the sort of the general pattern of thought there, yes.
Okay, well, Dr. Joseph, thank you so much. That, in a nutshell, is STODs. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a big pleasure. Yeah, it's an interesting new term, and we've got of the what's called the World College of Refractive Surgeons, and there's a committee that sits down and is busy rephrasing these terms, and a lot of them misnomers, because it misguides the public. People misunderstand what they're actually going through, and sometimes blame surgery for causing what they say is a dry eye. Whereas if we pick it up early and pick up other comorbidities early and know that we're going to struggle in the postoperative period, and understand why it's happening, then it makes the journey for the patient easier to understand as well. And when you're using the right terms, it makes it more understandable. A dry eye is a very different thing. It's a much more complex pathology, and there's far more at play when you're talking about a classic dry eye, which is unrelated to actually surgery. And so we've got to change the way people think about it, and that's why we changed the nomenclature.
Dr. Joseph, that's it for today's Medical Monday. Just before we get into the contact details, so with the current load shedding crisis in South Africa, you were very fortunate to not experience it in Milan.
My goodness.
Yeah, but anyway, so I just wanted to highlight that you are load shedding proof at your practice.
Yes, yeah. So we, at the Advanced Health Surgical Center in Eisner, fortunately, all my equipment is connected to UPS, and then the UPSs are connected to inverters. Yeah. So if the generator at the hospital was not to kick in, we'd have battery inverter systems in place. So it's a protective mechanism so that we don't blow the equipment, but two, to ensure that we are up and running 24/7. That's really important. We can't lose data. We can't have screens go on and off in our diagnostics, because it takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours in the morning to prep the office before we even start our day.
Wow.
That's how many servers we've got, how much diagnostic instrumentation we've got, and patient medical records that we've got to make sure are up and running and there the whole time. So absolutely, no, we're safe against the load shedding pandemic, if I can call it.
Yeah, well done, because that's really good investment. I think more and more people will go that direction. It really looks like it, just becoming less dependent on Eskom. Anyway, Dr. Joseph, how do we get in touch with you?
Yes. Yeah. So our local landline is in Meisner, 044-150-0085. We've got an email addressed to directly to Mariska is info@drdillonjoseph.com. Our website is www.drdillonjoseph.com, and you can download a whole bunch of useful info regarding different procedures. And we've got our Instagram and our Facebook and a YouTube video page up and running, so you can also learn about the various procedures that we talk through on our YouTube channel.
And that's another week's Medical Monday, Dr. Joseph. As always, thanks for sharing your knowledge. Until next week.
Yeah, big pleasure, Jan. Yeah, have a great week, and we'll chat to you on Monday next week again.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Perfect. Okay. Cheers, Jan.